What if a fundamental law of computing, one that's driven innovation for decades, is actually evolving right now, right before our eyes?
And what if that evolution is shaping the very future of AI?
Exactly. Today, we're diving deep into a really fascinating parallel. It's the history of computer chips, believe it or not, and the cutting edge of artificial intelligence. Well, we're going to try and unpack why the current way of building these huge AI models is kind of hitting its limits.
Yeah, and what the next big architectural shift looks like for the whole field. It's a big one.
It really is.
So our mission for this deep dive is, it's to pull out the crucial insights from this great article, Moore's Law for AI, Cracking AI Engineering.
Yeah.
We want to show you how the computing world solved a remarkably similar challenge quite a while back.
And how AI is, it looks like it's poised to do the same thing now.
Yeah. We'll look at the specific bottlenecks these large language models, LLMs, are facing.
Mm-hmm.
And the innovative solutions that are starting to pop up will connect these technical shifts to the real world implications.
How you'll actually interact with AI pretty soon.
Exactly. In the very near future.
Okay. So let's unpack this. We should probably start with Moore's Law itself.
Good place to start.
That famous prediction, right?
Yeah.
That the number of transistors you could fit on a chip would roughly double every 2 years.
Yeah, and for decades, that just fueled unbelievable progress in CPU speed. Computers just kept getting faster.
Seemingly automatically, almost.
It felt like it. But what's truly fascinating here is how this incredible progress, it eventually hit a wall.
A physical limit?
A physical limit, yeah. Known as Dennard scaling. The idea was, as transistors got smaller, their power density, like how much heat they generate in a small space, should stay constant.
But it didn't.
It didn't. By the early 2000s, that kind of broke down.
Yeah.
Making them smaller meant they started, leaking current.
Leaking, like wasting power.
Yeah. Wasting power, exactly, and causing way too much heat. Power density just went through the roof.
Ah, okay.
And that basically capped single-core CPU performance. You couldn't just keep making one core faster and faster.
Right. And this is where the historical parallel gets really, really interesting for AI.
Uh-huh.
Because the industry didn't just, stop. They didn't throw their hands up.
No way.
Instead, they pivoted. They found a completely new path. Chip designers started putting multiple cores.
Multiple cores on the same chip. Yeah.
Exactly. So Moore's Law, in terms of just transistor count, that still sort of held true.
Yeah, the density kept increasing.
But the architecture, the whole design philosophy, changed entirely.
It was a fundamental shift. It wasn't about making one thing faster anymore.
It was about doing more things at once. Parallelism.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the bigger picture, this shift to multi-core meant software had to change too.
Oh yeah, big time.
Programs needed to become, multi-threaded, right? To actually use all that parallel processing power.
Otherwise, you just had cores sitting idle.
Exactly. It was a pivotal shift, a massive architectural rethink. And it allowed performance to keep scaling, just not in the way everyone expected.
Not that simple, linear, single-core way.
Right. It was a distributed solution, really, to what had become a centralized bottleneck.
Okay. Now, fast forward to today. And the article we're looking at suggests AI, specifically these large language models, LLMs, they're at a very similar point.
A similar kind of transition, yeah.
We've seen this, explosion in model sizes. Just massive.
Huge. Billions, trillions of parameters.
But the returns on actual intelligence seem to be, sublinear. Less bang for your buck.
You put it perfectly. It's like trying to make a single chef cook faster by just giving them a bigger and bigger kitchen.
Right. At some point, it just doesn't help anymore. You need more chefs.
Exactly. So this brings us to the crucial question. What are the specific bottlenecks for AI this time?
Uh-huh.
And the article outlines several key limitations. And honestly, they really echo the challenges those single-core CPUs faced.
Okay, let's break those down for you. First up, the article points to diminishing returns from model size and data.
Yeah. Simply put, just making LLMs bigger and feeding them more data doesn't make them proportionally smarter.
The gains just taper off.
They really do. Meanwhile, the computational cost, the data requirements, they skyrocket.
So you're throwing way more resources in for smaller and smaller improvements.
Exponentially more resources, often for marginal gains. Research shows performance can really plateau.
Especially with synthetic data, right? Stuff generated by other AIs.
Yeah, that can be a big issue. It just kind of rehashes existing patterns. And this isn't just an efficiency problem. It leads straight into the next bottleneck.
Which is energy and computational costs.
Oh, yeah. Training these monsters is just hugely expensive. Think of massive data centers, tons of electricity.
The article had a stat on this, didn't it?
It did, and it's pretty stark.
Yeah.
Training a single large AI model can emit over 626,000 pounds of carbon dioxide.
Wow.
That's like the lifetime emissions of five cars for one training run.
That really puts it in perspective. It's environmentally unsustainable besides being just expensive.
Absolutely. And it directly parallels those power and heat problems that killed Dennard scaling for CPUs. It's a physical resource limit again, in a way.
Okay, what else? Then there's the data quality and availability issue.
Right. LLMs need truly vast amounts of high-quality, diverse data. But finding, and importantly, curating that data at scale...
It's getting harder.
It's getting much harder. Some researchers talk about hitting the data wall. Like, we're running out of unique, high-quality text on the internet to train on.
Huh. I hadn't thought about literally running out.
It's a concern. Plus, you have the risk of data contamination.
What's that?
It's where models might inadvertently get trained on data that's very similar to the benchmark tests used to evaluate them later.
Ah, so it looks like they're smarter than they really are because they've sort of seen the answers before.
Exactly. It inflates the performance metrics, but it doesn't reflect true general intelligence.
Gotcha. Okay, next constraint.
Then we have architectural constraints. The main architecture, the transformer, which is, you know, the engine behind most LLMs.
Yeah.
It has some built-in inefficiencies. The big one is this thing called the self-attention mechanism.
Okay.
The way it works means if you double the length of the input text, the computation time doesn't just double.
It quadruples.
It quadruples. It's called quadratic complexity. And it means processing long documents or long conversations becomes incredibly computationally expensive.
And slow.
And slow, yeah.
Okay, and finally, the article mentions a big one. Lack of flexibility and modularity.
This is huge, practically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these giant LLMs are trained as single monolithic units, like one giant brain.
Which makes them rigid.
Very rigid. It's incredibly hard to update them with new information or specialize them for a specific task or adapt them without retraining the entire model from scratch or close to it.
And retraining is?
Costly, time-consuming, difficult to manage in a live production environment. This rigidity really holds back their practical use in many cases.
Yeah, I can see that.
So you put all this together, diminishing returns, massive costs, data walls, architectural limits, rigidity.
The conclusion seems pretty clear.
It points to one thing. The single model, scale is all you need strategy is running out of steam.
Just like single core CPUs hit their limit.
Exactly. And just as the CPU industry found its answer in parallelism, multi-core.
The AI field is now finding its answer in modularity.
Modularity. That's the key idea. The focus is shifting. It's not just about scaling up anymore. It's also about scaling down, meaning improving efficiency.
Right.
And scaling out, building distributed and modular systems.
Okay, so what does this shift actually look like? The article argues the future isn't one single super brain.
No, definitely not. It's moving away from that monolithic idea towards modular, composable AI systems.
Composable. Like building blocks.
Exactly like building blocks. Think of it more like a team of specialized experts rather than one genius trying to know and do absolutely everything.
Okay, that makes sense. A team.
And this shift, it's not just theoretical. It's already starting to happen. We're seeing systems built from many specialized, often smaller models working together.
Right. Can you give us some examples? What are the key features here?
Sure. So first, you have specialized modules, often using an architecture called Mixture of Experts, or MoE.
Mixture of Experts. Okay.
Instead of one huge model trying to handle everything, you have smaller expert models. Each one is specialized for a particular kind of task, or maybe a specific domain of knowledge.
So like one expert for summarizing text, another for writing code, another for analyzing images.
Sort of, yeah. Or even more granular. Google's Pathways system, for instance, aims to only activate the relevant parts of a huge network for a given task. Anthropic's Claude apparently uses specialized prompt processing pipelines internally, too.
Making things more efficient.
Exactly. And then there's dynamic composition. This uses things like multi-agent planners or tool-using LLMs.
What does dynamic composition mean here?
It means the system can assemble the right modules, the right experts, or even external tools on the fly, depending on the specific task you give it.
Ah, so it builds the team it needs in real time.
Pretty much. There's often a lead agent, kind of like a manager, that figures out the task and then coordinates these specialized sub-agents or tools.
The article mentioned XAI's Grok doing something like this for astronomy.
Yeah, that's a good example. Assisting astronomers by dynamically pulling together different AI agents for, say, image processing or data retrieval from a specific database or orbital calculations. And it can talk to external tools like star catalog APIs.
So it's orchestrating resources.
Orchestration is a great word for it. And tools like LangGraph, AutoGen, CrewAI are helping developers build these kinds of dynamic multi-agent systems.
Okay, what else defines this modular approach?
Well, underpinning a lot of this is parallel and distributed processing.
Right, like the multi-core CPUs.
Exactly. These multi-agent frameworks are often designed to split up complex cognitive tasks. Different agents can work on sub-problems like retrieval, reasoning, planning at the same time.
Across different processors or even different machines.
Yeah, potentially across a whole hierarchy of agents or devices. This speeds things up immensely and allows for much more scalable AI workloads. Frameworks like Ray or Apache Spark help manage this distributed computation.
Makes sense. If you have a team, they need to share information effectively, right?
Absolutely crucial. Which leads to unified knowledge access. These modular systems need really efficient ways for different parts to share information and access knowledge.
How do they do that?
A couple of ways. Sometimes through structured memory systems that provide like a persistent scratch pad or context that different modules can read from and write to.
Okay.
Or very commonly now through retrieval augmented generation, RAG.
Ah, RAG. We hear that term a lot.
Yeah. RAG essentially allows an AI module to pull in relevant information from external knowledge sources, like huge databases or document collections on demand.
So it can look things up, basically.
Exactly. Tools like Llama Index or Haystack help build these RA pipelines. It makes the AI much more grounded in factual, up-to-date information.
Okay, any other key features?
One more the article highlights is hybrid approaches.
Hybrid, meaning?
Combining these neural language models, the LLMs, with other AI techniques, maybe older symbolic reasoning or planning methods or reinforcement learning.
So mixing different types of AI together.
Exactly. The example given is Voyager, an AI agent that explores game worlds like Minecraft. It uses an LLM, but also writes and executes its own code to learn new skills. It's combining perception, planning, and action generation.
Interesting. So neural nets plus other stuff?
Right. DeepMind's AlphaCode for programming also integrates neural models with search-based planning. It shows you can get more robust, more capable systems by combining strengths.
Wow. Okay. So lots of different aspects to this modular shift. What are the main advantages then? Why go through all this complexity?
Well, the benefits are pretty significant. You get better scalability, obviously. Mm-hmm. You can add more specialized modules. Better efficiency, because you're only activating the parts you need.
More flexibility, too, I imagine.
Huge flexibility. You can update or replace individual modules without retraining the whole system. That's massive for keeping AI up to date.
And maybe even interpretability. Easier to see which part did what.
Potentially, yes. It can be easier to trace behavior back to specific modules. And for developers building these things,
yep,
it means things like more granular monitoring. You can see how each piece is performing. Localized debugging, finding problems in one module. Easier updates. It brings AI development much closer to standard, robust software engineering practices.
Which is a huge win for putting this stuff into real products.
Absolutely. But
there's always a but.
There's always a but. It's definitely not trivial. This whole architectural shift introduces new complexities.
Like what?
Well, designing the overall system, figuring out how the modules should coordinate, how they communicate effectively. These are hard problems.
The interfaces between the modules.
Exactly. The standards for how these different AI brains talk to each other are still, you know, evolving. It's early days for some of this.
So it requires a different kind of thinking.
Totally. Just like multi-core CPUs forced a rethink of software development, this modular AI approach forces us to fundamentally rethink how we build, deploy, and even how we evaluate intelligent systems.
Okay. But what's really exciting, you mentioned earlier, is this isn't just engineering to work around limits. The article argues these multi-module systems actually boost intelligence.
Yes. That's a critical point. It's not just about making things run faster or cheaper. It's about achieving genuinely smarter outcomes through collaboration between components.
Okay, so what's the evidence for that? Does collaboration really make the AI smarter?
Well, the article cites some compelling examples. Anthropic, for instance, did research using a lead agent coordinating multiple specialized subagents. And they reported a 90% plus improvement on complex research tasks compared to just using their single biggest model, Claude Opus 4, on its own.
90%. That's huge.
It's a massive uplift. Another example is something called Agent Group Chat V2.
Okay.
It showed significant accuracy gains on standard benchmarks, like 5.6 points higher on GSM-8K, which is a math reasoning test. And it nearly doubled the accuracy on another benchmark called AM.
And the key part?
The key part is they achieved this without making the underlying models bigger. It wasn't about scale. It was purely about the collaboration architecture, how the agents work together.
Wow. So the way you structure the team makes the whole system smarter than the sum of its parts.
That's exactly the idea. The focus shifts from how do I make one model smarter to how do I compose intelligent behavior from a system of interacting parts?
Right. It enables scaling horizontally, adding more specialized components rather than just vertically making one model bigger and bigger.
It's a totally different way to think about AI progress. It's about system intelligence, not just component intelligence.
Okay, so this paradigm shift.
Yeah.
It obviously has big implications for people working in AI.
Huge implications, both for the engineers building this stuff and for the leadership setting the direction.
Let's talk about AI engineers first. How does their job change?
Well, your focus really shifts. It moves away from, say, just tweaking prompts for one giant model.
Which has been a big focus recently.
It has. But now it's moving towards designing and orchestrating these entire intelligent systems. The unit of work isn't just the model anymore. It's the whole interconnected system.
So skills like system design, integration.
Exactly. Mastering system composition.
Yeah.
Tackling the complexity of getting different modules to talk to each other reliably. And designing for emergent behavior, the surprising things that can happen when agents interact.
That sounds like traditional software engineering skills becoming more important in AI.
Absolutely. Things like robust communication protocols, maybe standardized APIs or event-driven architectures, modular design principles, good tooling for visualization, logging, monitoring, automated testing frameworks.
So bringing that software engineering rigor to AI systems.
That's a huge part of it. We need those well-established practices to manage this new complexity.
What else should engineers be thinking about?
Staying current is critical. The field is moving so fast. Experimentation is key.
Trying out these new libraries and frameworks we mentioned.
Definitely. Exploring new approaches. And shifting focus maybe towards the inference time architecture, how the system works when it's actually running and answering questions.
Rather than just the scale of the pre-training phase.
Right. Thinking about memory-aware designs, sparsity using only the needed parts of models, planning for systems with heterogeneous models, different types of models that need to communicate and cooperate smoothly.
So the next big breakthroughs might come from smarter system design, not just bigger models.
I think that's exactly what the article suggests. Systems designed to collaborate more intelligently.
Okay, now what about AI leadership? How does this shift impact strategy and team structure?
Well, the old way of structuring teams, often around just training one big model, that probably has to change.
How so?
Teams might need to be organized more around system capabilities. Hmm. You might have a team focused on the reasoning components, another on retrieval, another on user interaction.
Rather than everyone working on the model.
Exactly. It means leaders need to prioritize hiring for a broader range of expertise. Yes, ML experts, but also people skilled in distributed systems, orchestration, building end-to-end LLM applications.
Those complementary skills.
Very much so. And there's a crucial cultural shift needed, too.
Culture? In what way?
Well, AI projects, especially with these complex probabilistic systems, they really demand an iterative, experimental approach. You can't always predict perfectly how they'll behave.
Lots of trial and error.
Lots of trial and error. So leaders need to cultivate a culture that embraces iteration, that trusts experimentation, that relies on feedback loops for refinement.
And encourages collaboration between different roles.
Absolutely. Breaking down silos between, say, ML engineers, backend developers, infrastructure folks, they all need to work together closely to build these systems.
Okay. And the article mentioned one more thing for leadership, a portfolio mindset.
Yeah, I liked that framing. Think about it. Scaling with a single monolith is kind of linear. More data, more compute, bigger model.
Right.
But scaling with modular AI is different. The questions become, which subsystems give us the best return on investment if we optimize them? Which new capabilities? Which new modules should we integrate next?
It's more like managing a portfolio of interacting components.
Exactly. It requires more cross-functional coordination and a much more architectural system-level view of making progress.
So pulling it all together then, what's the big takeaway?
The big picture here is that Moore's Law didn't really end for computing power. It just evolved.
Right. The exponential progress continued, but through architectural change, multi-core, not just scaling single cores.
Precisely. And the article makes a really compelling case that AI is standing at that exact same kind of inflection point right now.
So the future isn't necessarily about building the single biggest model.
No. The future likely belongs to the best system of models, the most effective team of collaborating agents.
This whole deep dive, it really suggests the next frontier in AI isn't just building smarter individual brains.
But orchestrating entire intelligent societies in a way. Systems of systems.
That's a powerful idea.
So here's something maybe for you to think about as you go about your day. If AI's intelligence is going to come more and more from this collaboration between specialized parts,
yeah,
what new possibilities does that open up? Tasks that seemed way too complex for a single AI, maybe they become achievable now with a team approach.
Hmm. And how does that change the skills we might need or the kinds of problems we choose to solve with AI?
Exactly. How do we prepare for and build within this emerging world of composable intelligence? It's a fascinating question.